My name is Bill, and I am an alcoholic.
I'm Bill.
I don't represent AA. I am not an authority on the books or the literature of AA. The things I share with you are from the book or have been taught by either my sponsor or other people in AA. So, with that said, I'd like to go to the foreword of the first edition and just read the first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And to show other alcoholics precisely how we recovered or have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the fact the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. So I've come in here in a very seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I understood, as they taught me, that I was a sick person. Not only mentally, but physically. I had a two-edged sword waging over me. I had a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. So did that mean I was a bad person? No. Did it mean I was crazy? No. Because in so many other ways, it seemed that I can do things in my life with the charge of my own will. But as the sickness had grown, because of alcohol or whatever it was with you, things got worse. And I depended more on the alcohol than I did on my own will. Because I found that my own will, the same mind that got me in trouble, was not going to give me solutions. You okay, hon?
Oh, not really.
Hey, just relax. You're in a good place.
That's right.
And you never have to feel this way again.
Thank you.
Okay. So, just to give a little recap, if you read the first chapters, like the doctor's opinion, if you read Bill's story up to page 8, you can identify with his alcoholism. In the doctor's opinion, it explains our disease, our sickness. And then it gets into, there's a solution, which kind of like touches on what the solution is. And then the next chapter is more about alcoholism. And in the solution, we find out and read that the alcoholic has no effective mental defense against the first drink. And I never understood that. I never knew that. I thought I could control my drinking. And even if I abstained for a while, you know, every year for Lent I used to give up alcohol. Finally I gave up Lent. So, think about that. At certain times, the alcoholic has no effective mental defense against the first drink. That's pretty powerful. So then when we get into more about alcoholism, there's a phrase in here that I always liked because it made sense to me. And it said that that curious mental phenomenon that the doctor talked about in the doctor's opinion, the phenomenon of craving. Here it's talking about that curious mental phenomenon parallels with sound thinking. So much that sound thinking will not even make me consider not having that first drink. It parallels. You know what parallel means? It just checks it out. It checks out the sound reasoning. You know, sound reasoning. If I was to drink gasoline, you know, I think I'm crazy. But gasoline would make me sick, possibly kill me. But sound reasoning tells me that, so I don't drink gasoline. Now, to drink alcohol for me could make me deathly sick or kill me. But yet, for some reason, sound reasoning checks out. Can't hold me in check. It's pretty amazing. So this is a very, very powerful disease. And when I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, I admitted all those things. Powerful disease. And then we come to we agnostics. So what is agnostics and what does God have to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, in the 12 and 12, the first chapter talks about who likes to admit complete defeat. Well, no one. Every instinct goes against it. But then it says, but glass in hand, we drank to such destruction that only an act of providence. Only an act of providence. So we have a spiritual solution. And agnostics is when we really start to dive into step 2 and 3. So there's a few things I want to read out of here in the beginning. So the one... Well, let me just read the first. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something about alcoholism. We hope we have made it clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, which they did. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer. It's pretty, for an agnostic or an atheist, that's a pretty heavy statement. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Why is that? Well, because I lived on self-will all my life. I was selfish, self-centered, self-delusional. You know, I was successful. I did things on my own and I thought, well, I got this. You know, I built a good life. did all this work in my home. I did all this work in my yard. I did all this. I worked a great job. I. And I used to say, well, I took care of my family. Well, when I really started to get honest by doing this program, I realized that my wife probably had more to do with that than I did. And after 32 years, she passed away from cancer. And I'm indebted to her for all she's put up with for all those years. So we learned that there is nothing I can do, no human power, no mental facility, no mental faculty, no intelligence, no talent. There was nothing that came from here that was going to give me the solution for my alcoholism. Had to be from a power greater than myself. And to believe that is not always easy alternatives to face. But the other alternative is to go on to be doomed to an alcoholic death and misery. But we don't have to. We don't ever have to feel that way again. And just reading a few simple principles and living by them. So, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, well, many of us would have recovered a long time ago, right? You know? Well, I'm not going to come to meetings anymore. I found a church, a religion. Well, wait a minute. If there was a mere code of morals, just said here, or a better philosophy, then we would have overcome alcohol a long time ago. Doesn't make sense. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we can will these things with all our might. But the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Wow. So there's a great word here. The needed power. Power. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. I didn't have the power to stop drinking. I didn't have the choice to stop drinking. I could not control my drinking. Kind of synonymous, in a sense, right? Those three words. We had to find a power which we could live, by which we could live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main objective is, his main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will help solve your problem. No. It doesn't say help solve your problem. You need to find a power greater than yourself, which by you can solve your problem. No, it doesn't say that either.
You can't solve my problem.
It's a power greater than yourself.
No.
Which... Well, honey, we'll talk about that later. Why don't you talk about that later with one of these girls?
Because I remember late. I was sober for 6 years. I've been domestic violence 2 years, and I can't figure it out. And that's why I'm in this.
All right, well, stay and listen.
No, I can't.
Okay. That would be your decision.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. So, it's a power greater than ourselves, which will, it doesn't say it might, it says it will solve my problem, your problem. That's amazing. So wait. So going somewhere and learning to cope with my problems is not the answer?
I'm sorry,
no.
What did you say?
Hon, we got a meeting going on here. If you want to talk, you can come back later.
I thought you asked me a question.
No, I'm not asking you a question. Thank you. So we don't learn to cope with our problem. That's what they do in therapy. Here in AA, we learn that we find a power greater than ourselves because came to believe in a power greater than ourselves would restore me to sanity. And the sanity that I was living was doing the same thing over and over and over and over again, expecting it to be different this time. When I took that first drink, I thought, well, this is going to be fun. This is going to be different. And it never was. It never was. It was always the same kind of results. And a power greater than ourselves, which will solve your problem. So that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here the difficulty arises for agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man or watch his hope rise and discuss the alcoholic problem and explain our fellowship, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters. And especially when we mention God. For we have reopened the subject which our... Why is that? As soon as you mention God to somebody, they become closed-minded, rebellious. Well, it tells us here. For we reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Yeah, I know how he feels, because I shared the same thing. I was talking to somebody in the parking lot that I've been working with tonight, who called me. And he's struggling with this. And he was telling me a lot of why he doesn't believe. And I said, well, you have honest doubt and prejudice. A lot of it has to do with what you may have been taught as a child, what somebody tried to shove down your throat. And then I find out he has a handicapped child. And it comes from all directions. Well, God did that so you would be a better man, or God did that so your wife would be a better woman, you know. And he started with all that. Honest doubt and prejudice. Step three says we I don't know why I got a blank, but we made a decision after we believed. You know, believing is the key in step two. The subject is whatever you want to believe in. But let me say this, whatever you believe in must be a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So don't come here telling me, well, I believe in this chair, if that's what I want to believe, fine. That chair is going to give you the power, which will solve your problem. Good for you. So, you know, why So we have shared his honest doubt and prejudice, and I remember that myself. I had such a hate, such a disdain for religion in my life. I didn't want to hear about it. That I would get sick to my stomach when I'd hear people say stuff that I just couldn't swallow. Couldn't believe that they blame God for. I had learned, now I think I learned this at a very young age, and it just stayed with me, even though they taught it, but they taught against it as well, that God given us all freedom of will. And I have learned that God does not go against the principle or any principle or immutable laws that he had designed. He will not go against your freedom of will. So I have learned that we have freedom of will. And I look at my life and I hear people say, well, I got the gift of desperation. Well, wait a minute. You mean God gave you a gift of desperation? So it's God's fault that you're an alcoholic? Well, that's what you're saying, isn't it? No, God didn't give me a gift of desperation. My actions, that desperation is a result of my actions. My decisions. God didn't put the bottle up to my mouth. He didn't go into the liquor store and buy me liquor. You know, it's simple stuff. So that's where freedom of will comes in. And when I hear people say, well, God did this and God made me do that, and I get nervous. Freedom of will. We made a decision to turn our will and our life, over to God. No. It doesn't say that. It says over to the care of God. Your children, if you have children, your children's lives are in your care. They don't have to worry about eating, having clothing, a bed to sleep in, groceries in the house, and many other things, right? Because they're in your care. You care for them. My higher power cares for me. And I have a conscious contact with him, just like your children. You could be in the same room with them and they're playing and you're doing something else, but in their mind, there's a conscious contact. They know you're there. Just walk away for a minute and see what happens. They'll follow you, right? As busy as they may seem doing what they're doing, as soon as you get up and leave, they'll follow you. Because there's a conscious contact. And that's the kind of conscious contact I want with my higher power. Every day. I have a knowing that he's there all the time. I'm not always in prayer constantly. You know, my child's playing over there and I'm doing something over here. We're not talking back and forth, and he's not asking me all these. There's times when they may, just like there's times when I pray. See, it's the real deal is life. So anyway, I'll read one more paragraph here and then we'll go over to, I guess, 52, where he ended up, right? But I just wanted to lay out a little background. Yes, we of agnostic temperament had had the thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside, we say the lay aside prayer tonight. It doesn't say get rid of it. It doesn't say forget about it. It just says lay it aside. Just put it over here for a little bit. Lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves. We commence to get results, even though it was impossible for us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. When I was in rehab, I would go to the Big Book meeting. This guy, he was phenomenal. He was just great when it came to the Big Book. But he did the story about Ebby coming over to see Bill. And he goes through all this stuff, and Bill's thinking about his past and his grandfather and all this. And I'm, you know, I can identify with that. And Bill's like, yeah, there's a guy, but I don't know if he's, you know, personal to me or would do these things. And Bill says, and Ebby says, listen, it's a God of your own concept. You don't have to follow any religious belief. You don't have to follow, you know, any traditions. You don't have to, you know. And I'm not trying to sound arrogant here, but you don't have to sit, stand, kneel. You know, you don't have to wear a hat. You don't have to count beads. Just talk. Just you and God. Just you and that higher power. And so anyway, after he did that, I went outside. It was nighttime, and it was up in Pennsylvania. And I went out in the woods, and I just looked up in the sky, and I said, you know, I don't know anything. I don't know anything about you. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you are. And I pointed in the sky, and I said, but I know you're the only one that can help me. And after that, I had a spiritual experience, because I just made it personal between God and me. And I still work on that in my life today when I pray, reminding myself who I am, reminding myself who He is, and the power is there when I need it. When I do God's will. It's not there when I do my will. So, the prejudice and express the willingness. Willingness is the key. To believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results. And that's true. Look at every person that walks into AA and is sober today had the willingness to believe in the power greater than themselves, and they have results today. They're not drinking. For me, that was a miracle. How did that happen? You know, I drank for over 40, almost 50 years. How did that happen? All of a sudden, one day, I'm not drinking or drugging or anything. Just like that. So, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend power, still can't. You know, every time I think God should do something a certain way, you know, like I'm a little broke and, you know, help me win the lottery, never works out that way. But if I just put it in God's hands and I let it go, somehow, some way, the needs are met. Works. So, it says, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's concept of God. Our own concept, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. You know, I shied away from the what they call the prayers, you know, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. All of a sudden, there's prayers for everything. And I was like, you know, I went through that when I was a kid. You know, I had to remember all these different prayers that I never put any heart behind or never thought they did anything for me. And now I'm in AA and they're coming up with all these, you know, fifth step, third step. So I was still prejudiced of all that stuff. And my prayers were very simple. It was like, look, God, thank you for this day and thank you for keeping me sober today. And it grew from there. My prayers, I tried to pray from the heart. What's going on in my heart? What's going on in my life? What do I need to do to help another alcoholic? Which really gives me so much joy and peace. So, and no matter how inadequate or sufficient to me to make the approach and to effect a contact with him, as soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlining the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction.
What page are you on?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry, 46. So, provided we took other simple steps. And I believe that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is made up of men's experiences and God's inspiration. How else can you explain it? So, I don't know what time it is. What time is it?
About 7 after. Can you go to 7:30?
Sure. So we're going to go over to 52. Page 52. Well, I'll tell you what, let's start on 50. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declared that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power, and to do certain simple things, which are the steps, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. You know, half measures get you nowhere. Wholeheartedly. Once confused and baffled, which I was when I came in, confused, baffled, insane, by a seemingly futility of existence, they show that the underlining reason why they were making heavy going of life, leaving aside the drink question. They tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. It makes a lot of sense to me. So, this world of ours has made more material progress in the last centuries. I don't really want to get into that. So, logic is page 53. Logic is great stuff. We like it. We still like it. It is not by chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses. That's a funny thing he says it that way. Because to examine the evidence of our senses. With the five senses, we see first and then we believe. It's just designed that way. But when it comes to faith, you have to have faith. You have to believe first. And then you see. So it's not, we don't walk by the senses anymore, we walk by faith. It's pretty wild. And those few days in a week or a month that I actually do walk by God's will and faith, the results are unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, you know, I got this. And I have to start to inject my will in there and start to think, wow, I'm a pretty smart guy. And I'm really being stupid. It's funny, huh? How that works. Always want to take over. So logic's great stuff. And to examine the evidence of our senses and to draw conclusions, that is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. Well, I don't know if that's so true today, because we got a lot of unreasonable approaches, especially in government. But anyway, hence we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it more sane and logical to believe than not to believe, why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. That's pretty funny too, to say, we don't know. Never thought in my life I'd say, I don't know. I always thought I knew everything. I didn't, but I thought I did. And, you know, today when people come up to me or they ask me a question or I do something, I don't know. And I just put it in God's hands. Or I ask somebody who may have experienced something. See, it's man's experience inspired by God. Intuitive thoughts. When we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. I was faced with that many times. You know, when my wife passed away, my faith was shaken. You know, when I lost, when I had financial issues, faith was shaken. But getting involved with the men's meetings that I did and the other meetings that I got into, and getting indulging in this and the steps, taking people through the steps, I got through it. They came out with a better understanding. You know, life's going to go on. You know, one generation comes, another one goes. Or one goes and one comes. A man shared the other night that his father passed away at the age of 93. The same day, he became a grandfather.
What a blessing. And he's you know, he's blessed about that. When life goes, when life comes. We just got to understand life. But with the higher power, a spiritual way of looking at things, maybe there's something a little better that we never knew. I'd rather do the right thing and find out that I did the right thing than do the wrong thing and find out that I should have done the right thing. So, arrived at this point, did I finish that? We had to feel, either God is everything or nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And when my sponsor first took me through the steps, you know, I was kind of like arguing and fighting everything. And finally he said to me, Bill, you know, get off the debating society. You know, either God is or he isn't. Either he's everything or he's nothing. Hey, listen, what do you got to lose to say God is everything? To say he's nothing, well, I lived that way for many years. It didn't work. Try something new. When we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, remember? It's not a gift of desperation, it's a self-imposed crisis. The gift is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We could not postpone or evade. I read that, didn't I? Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of the new land had brought luster to the tired eyes and fresh courage to the flagging spirit. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far. But somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. It's pretty wild. Leaning too much. There's and don't go back and say, well, Bill's preaching and he's religious, but there's a proverb that I like very much that says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. The part that really gets me, it says, lean not unto thine own understanding. That's what it said right here. In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. So do I acknowledge him in all my ways? Do I pray to God? I prayed to God before I came here. Do I acknowledge? Yes. I try to. Because, you know, when I got to step 12 said that having a spiritual awakening, well, when you awake, what happens? Your eyes open. Your mind starts to move and you think. A spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. This is not a theory. It says it in the big book. This is not a theory. It's real. There's millions of people today that are living a sober life because of this right here. I feel for that lady. The very thing that would help her, she walked away from. It's sad. We were grateful that we read that. So that was natural. But let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? Yeah. In other words, I got to the place where my senses, my five senses and my thinking and nothing, all that was at the end, hit the wall. There was nowhere else to go. So it brought me to where we stood by a certain kind of faith. And then we had to take a look. There was a certain kind of faith. Now it was up to us. Either it was everything or nothing. For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful. Objectively, faithful to God, of the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. We found also, or two, that we had been worshiping, we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Sorry, I don't have my glasses on. So. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then with a better motive, we had not worshipfully, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw at last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine of the course of our existence? It was impossible to say that we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Well, that's very logical. How many believed in our education abilities? We went to college or we get into a trade or whatever it was that we decided to a career for our life. How many believed in ourselves could do that? How many did fall in love with a person and for some reason life just seemed so dandy when you're around that person? Worshipfully. I mean, the stuff that they written down and they put in here, I mean, these are things they've experienced as well. It's not something they're making up, and it's not like, okay, God told them, all right, Bill, write this. Capacity for faith. Capacity for faith. No, didn't do that. They experienced these things, and God brought that inspiration to their minds. Look at this experience you had. Look at this experience you had. God showed him solutions. Imagine life without faith, where nothing left but pure reason. It wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you could prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet, there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling onto destiny of nothingness? Of course we could. The electrons themselves seem to have more intelligence than that. At least, so the chemists say. Hence we saw reason itself isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. They say it's not entirely dependable. Though it emanate from our best minds, what about people who proved that man could never fly, and yet had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems? They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true. We denied it. I denied it. So, I think I shared enough. I hope I brought you a good meeting, and I guess we open it up, right?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.